from our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida. You are listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.
Going on, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Striking Corner.
The Striking Corner.
With your hosts, Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto. The guy who just chimed in right there, that was definitely Vinny Scotto. So what's going on, everybody? How's everybody doing? Happy Memorial Day. We are actually, I don't know, is it a happy Memorial Day? I don't think you're supposed to say that. But it's a day of remembrance for all of our fallen soldiers that have given us freedom in this country. So, but I hope everybody had a good long weekend, good holiday with your family and friends. Anyway, we are recording today. We were recording today. What's going on, everybody? What's going
on? Unnecessary talk.
Why not? I think it's important to wish everybody a happy holiday.
No, you're going into too much detail. They don't want to hear when we're recording. They just want to hear us say some good shit, like you're an asshole.
Yeah. Well, that's what you think they want to hear, but I think they don't want to hear that. But yes, sir. So what's up, man? What have you been? What were you up to this holiday weekend?
Not much, man. Just chilling, relaxing. You know, gym, normal day.
Nice. I actually went on vacation. And Vinny scolded me for it. He actually told me I'd, because my wife made me go on vacation. So he,
she was cracking the whip.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah. So, nope, but it was good, man. I have to be the doting husband every once in a while, sir.
Good for you.
Yeah. So, but yeah, man. But anyway. So. Yep. So let's get to the podcast then. Today's episode is brought to you by Florida Kickboxing Academy, our good friends here, really. They are in Florida. They are in my neck of the woods in West Palm Beach, Florida. Or more basically to be exact, they are in Riviera Beach, Florida. But it is none other than Ace of 10 Pals Gym. It is Florida Kickboxing Academy. That is 7655 Enterprise Drive. Riviera Beach, Florida, 33404. The owner is, of course, Asa Tempao, and the coaches include for Muay Thai adults, Asa Tempao, Marik Dadas, Jason Somchai, and then for Muay Thai kids, it would also be Asa Tempao, Joe Muller, Tyler Matsukas, and then Jiu-Jitsu coach for adults and kids is Michael Spolholtz. So once again, a very, very top-notch gym. You guys have all seen Asa fight. You've seen some of his fighters as well, such as our good friend Stefan Bobanchuk. And then there's a young girl coming up, Coral, who's very, very good as well. All of them are from Florida Kickboxing Academy, or FKA. So once again, that's 7655 Enterprise Drive, Riviera Beach, Florida, 33404. And once again, we say, you know, thank you very much for their support in supporting The Striking Corner. Besides that, we have a very special guest on today's podcast. It is somebody who is a good friend of ours, somebody we've been talking about for a long time. What happened? What are you chiming in with? I'm sorry,
anything, man.
I'm sorry. We need to, of course, bring up Vinny's social media. Let's talk about your social media, Vin.
What about it? It sucks. But follow me anyway.
But follow you anyway. At what, sir?
At Vinny Scotto.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Mine, you can follow me at Eric Rivera_TSC. But of course, more so than those two, follow us at Striking Corner on Instagram, at Striking Corner on Twitter. And also on strikingcorner.com is really where you can find all of our podcasts, as well as on iTunes and Spotify and SoundCloud and Stitcher and TuneIn and all of those awesome places. wherever you find your podcasts, that is where you will find us. And we continue. So anyway, that intro is all for the great Jeff DeHilio is on our show today, photographer extraordinaire. He is the, God, I keep on forgetting his title. What is his title?
You're such an asshole. I'm not telling you. Figure it out.
He is the creative, what is brand Chief officer? Chief brand officer?
Yes.
Chief brand officer for the USMF. Like I said, great photographer. You guys have all seen, if you guys have followed Muay Thai for quite some time, you guys have all seen his work. He is an awesome photographer that showcases not only, you know, not only the fights themselves, but really the emotion and everything goes that goes on behind the scenes in the fights. And he's definitely a very creative person. He's been doing a lot of great things for the USMF. And he's got a huge project that we're obviously going to talk about right now on the podcast. So without further ado, we will bring on none other than Jeff DeHilio.
The Striking Corner.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Striking Corner podcast. And as we had mentioned at the beginning, we have a very special guest. This is a guy I've known for a long time, mostly, though, only pretty much virtually, pretty much through Facebook and online and everything. But Jeff and I, this is Jeff. How do you say your last name? Is it DeHilio?
No, Helio. It's kind of like Helio Gracie.
Oh, okay.
It's a Portuguese pronunciation of a Filipino last name, DeHilio.
DeHilio. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Perfect.
Yes, because, you know, because I'm Latino, so I would say DeHilio, but, you know, that's. But DeHilio. All right. So we got Jeff. Jeff is a lot of you guys, if you guys haven't don't know about Jeff DeHilio, you guys definitely are not part of the grassroots Muay Thai movement. But it's definitely somebody you should know. He is photographer. What is your creative director right now for USMF? Is that what you're doing?
I'm actually the chief brand officer of the United States Muay Thai Federation.
Nice. But besides that, longtime fight photographer for the Muay Thai scene, as well as a photographer in his professional life as well. Does a lot of things, videography and amazing things like that. Back in the day, his Into the Fight series was great. I loved it. He's done a lot of stuff artistically for the sport and pushing the sport forward. He's been part of the grassroots movement of pushing Muay Thai forward for a long time. And, man, it's just so happy to have you on here, man. How you been?
Good. Thank you for having me on the podcast. You guys are doing a great job, so I'm really grateful to be here. I'm doing okay. I'm pretty busy. I feel like I have a couple of jobs going on at the same time, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, man. No, I know for sure. So like I said, anybody that knows you and knows your name, knows of your work, has seen your work for shooting for a variety of different promotions. I mean, tell me some of the promotions you've shot.
I think I've shot for, at least I could say my work has been involved with the majority of the promotions that have come to the West Coast. So I've shot the very first few Lion fights. I've worked for WCK at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I've shot a majority of the Muay Thai Association of America shows, the ones that brought out Sanchai, Kao Klai, Sakadao. My work has appeared on Glory's first poster of Joe Schilling. Mm-hmm. When he first came in, when he did the, I think it was the first time he fought Artem Levin. I've also had my work appear on ONE Championships with Janet Todd's photography. When she walked out, my photographs were her photos. I've shot K1 when it came to Los Angeles. So mm-hmm. I've shot a lot of great. I've been a part of a lot of great promotions. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, man, definitely. So, I mean, yes. Yeah, so, like I said, your work has been around for a long time. You are also, you have also been one of the guys behind West Coast Muay Thai, correct?
Right. I came into West Coast Muay Thai around, 2013 with my friend Galen. He started it, and I helped build the brand into, a clothing brand and a brand that helped support the West Coast. Nice. What's cool is, it was, a place just for a bunch of us to put our work together and mm-hmm. have a platform for it. Because at one time I was working with a different group of people, Can't Stop Crazy, which is, Joe Schill and Kevin Ross and mm-hmm. all those guys. And my work was geared toward them, but mm-hmm. I was also still shooting fights.
Yeah.
So that work kind of didn't go together at a certain point. So I needed a platform where I could put my fight photography, and it was West Coast Muay Thai, and Galen gave me the platform, and then I made a logo one day, and then he made a shirt, and then it was kind of crazy after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really taken off from there. You know, definitely West Coast Muay Thai, repping the West Coast, but you guys have also obviously spread to the East Coast. I think it's been a lot of a unification of sorts in a lot of ways. Muay Thai has really, I think, spread out. Like, when we first started, I mean, Jeff, I think you'll remember back in the day, there was really, it was the two sort of bastions of Muay Thai were either you were East Coast, West Coast, it was New York, LA, mm-hmm. and then everybody in between kind of was thrown out there, but those were like the two hotbeds for it, and they wasn't really as a united a feel as it kind of is now, which is great. But what I wanted to get into, man, is tell me a little bit about, I know your background is in photography, I know you're a professionally trained photographer, but tell me a little bit of how you got into Muay Thai, this love and passion that you have for Muay Thai. How did it all start? You know, how did that all come about, man?
My passion for Muay Thai really started with Bloodsport, you know, like just like a bunch of kids that grew up in the 90s watched Bloodsport and Paulo Tocha was whooping ass and we're like, damn, you know, there's karate, there's taekwondo, like what's that guy doing, you know? He made it to the quarterfinals. I gotta see what's up with that. And then back in the day, you know, before social media and, you know, Craigslist, there's a thing called the Yellow Pages. And I looked up Muay Thai in the Yellow Pages, and I was probably 16. And I started Muay Thai when I was 16 with Brian Dobler.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Oh, nice.
He had a crazy, like, mechanics garage with, like, no ring, just tape on the floor where there's, like, a circle or square and arrow how you threw your step where you threw your kicks. Shit was crazy, man. He had like sandbags and he had Thai oil for the first time. And he'd had these one song chai tapes and he'd play a one song chai like highlight video on like a small ass TV. And I would just see guys getting jump kneed in the face and those fools getting fucked up. Stretcher style, you know? Like,
yeah.
You don't really see that anymore, but dudes were on stretchers getting, you know, arm blimp hanging from the stretcher style.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready for Muay Thai back then. I was still like playing video games and chasing chicks and stuff and wanted to be a kid. Yeah. But I told myself at a later age I'd come back to it.
Yeah.
And then I started doing Muay Thai when I was 26. That really helped me a lot mentally and physically. I was like really out of shape and I trained with Melkor Menor.
Okay.
And gotcha. Artem Shiroshkin back when he was an amateur, Luis Bio. Oh, and nice. All those guys. My main coach was Kane Gale, who was one of the head coaches of the boxing club back then.
Okay.
And then I went to San Francisco for grad school. And then I started training at Fairtex with Jung Sinan nice. And Ganyao and N. And when I graduated, I came back to L.A. because that's where a lot of more work is for artists. You know, for San Francisco, there wasn't really a lot of work for, like, you know, commercial artists. So I came back to Los Angeles. And then Jung Sinan had some guys on a local card. I think that was like 2010, and he invited me to go to a WMC show. That's when WMC was allowed to sanction shows in California.
Yeah.
So I brought my camera just in case, you know, to see if I could get into the show for free because I didn't want to pay for the fights, and I wanted to see if, you know, if they bartered, if I shot the weigh-ins, maybe they'd let me in for free. So I got there, and you know, it was weird. It was like in some place in Montebello, a suburb of Los Angeles, and there are no cameras. You know, there's maybe one scale and a bunch of guys like looking hungry from all over the United States, probably California mostly. And I remember one guy just had like a point and shoot camera, like taking pictures of the weigh-ins. I was like, hey, showed him my camera, you know, can I take pictures of the weigh-ins? Will you let me in for free? They're like, yeah, like, I'll shoot your fight. One thing led to another. I shot the fights. My pictures were good. And then someone gave me a flyer to a Sanchai versus Tetsuya Yamada flyer.
Oh,
and I was like, who's throwing this fight, right? Who's throwing this?
Yeah.
And they're like, and then I met a guy named David Huerta who does Los Angeles Muay Thai, and he was a part of that promotion, and it went on from there.
Yeah, man. So you name drop a lot there, bud.
Sorry.
No, it's all good, man. That's great. I mean, yeah, so you were based on what you were saying, you were in San Diego, right? So you were in San Diego. Is that where you kind of started out and then moved around San Francisco and then LA? Right. Yeah, because
I went to school in San Diego.
Gotcha.
And then that's when I started doing Muay Thai, like, seriously.
Nice. Yeah, because that's where these guys were based, right? The boxing club Okay, so there, and then you went to San Fran. Yeah, so you really made your way. It's cool because that's kind of gives you a whole feel for the entire kind of West, like the California scene, you know, like you went from, you know, Southern California to North Cal, and then came back down and you were in LA. So you kind of, yeah, you have a lot of the feel and sort of hit on pretty much that growing scene, got a little bit to meet everybody that was kind of coming up at that time.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was fortunate to be at the right place at the right time and get into Muay Thai when it was really developing. There wasn't a lot of media, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Still really, I mean, there still isn't a whole shit ton of media.
That's true. There's more than there's a lot more than there was before.
Yeah.
Yeah. There isn't a lot.
Yeah. No, but it's crazy because, yeah, man, I mean, I remember when we started Muay Thai is Life and we had the blog. I mean, really, it was you out there, and then Galen came into the mix, who's, you know, now you work with at West Coast Muay Thai, but it was like, you guys were the only ones shooting, Marty as well, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was crazy, because it was like, you guys were the only ones shooting it, but it was so great, man, and what I think is so great about it is, even though it's been this, I guess it's had this, like, and you guys even use it in your West Coast Muay Thai slogan, kind of like about how it's been grassroots since the beginning. And we've been very, you know, even Muay Thai's Life, when I started this, it was very grassroots from the beginning. It was like, but the quality you brought was something, and the quality you continue to bring was something that is really great, because I think just to have the shots that you guys were taking and the emotions you guys were portraying from this very sort of gritty sport that wasn't really well known at the moment, but you guys were like showing it behind the scenes. I think in a lot of ways you've helped get eyes on the sport that would have normally not seen it. And I think that's why I'm so happy to have you on the podcast finally and talk to you is really kind of like you've seen a lot of the behind the scenes stuff of how this sport has grown. You know, you've seen how it's gone from small venues like you were talking about and Dobler being in a garage and all these kind of things to where they are now, you know?
Yeah.
And which is amazing, but you've seen it kind of from behind the lens. So tell me a little bit about that experience and kind of like, and I give me an idea of how you see it. Have you seen it evolve from behind the lens from the beginning to where it is now?
That's a good question. When I started shooting the sport, I want to be able to say something like, I'm not a fighter that likes photography, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a photographer that likes Muay Thai.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference. Also, let's put it into this perspective. There's businessmen that like Muay Thai, and there's Muay Thai guys that try to do business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So when I shoot, I'm not trying to impress anyone. It's just the what I see and how I digest it and what I feel is important in when I take these photographs. So after I started shooting the fights, I realized that the locker rooms were the biggest part of my work because I like the preparation, I like the pad work, I like the nerves, and I like the team environment. And that really dictated what I shot, you know? And then I started moving from shooting fights to just being in the locker rooms and shooting behind the scenes stuff. And that's where my career really elevated, because there are guys like Scott, there are guys like Galen that always shot the fights. There were guys like Marty, and everyone shooting the same fight. Yeah. You know, there's only so many pictures I want to see of the same punch and kick. You know what I mean?
It was
what I felt the most drawn to was, you know, the environment. So,
because you're showing a part of the sport that people who are fans in the crowds, even people who train that don't fight, that part of the sport they don't see.
Right.
Because I have people, you know, obviously we have people from our gyms that they train Muay Thai every day, but they haven't fought, so they don't really know what goes on back there.
Right.
So, and then that's what you're showcasing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, and especially, like, I guess for like a lot of the people that are fighters out there, and I remember, you know, at that time when I started seeing your stuff, I was still actively fighting. It was really kind of catching that feel behind the scenes, that nervousness. It was the nerves. it was the anxiety, but at the same time, the excitement, you know, because really, you know, we always say that the thing that's beautiful about this sport and that people don't get, that people that are on the outside looking in don't get is they see, you know, they see the violence, they see the show, they mm-hmm. see all that. And I mean, what they would call violence, and we see it as a beautiful thing, but they don't see what happens, you know, behind the scenes is that emotion, that teamwork, like, as you say, you know, just looking at your pictures, it's all of that. It's the, you know, I've seen a lot of your pictures which show, you know, the love between a cornerman and his fighter, you know, or the coach and his fighter, the cornerman, even the anxiety they go through as they're watching their guy fight, you know, the nerves and wrapping your hands and trying to like, how would I say, break the nerves with some humor behind the scenes, which is what a lot of fighters try to do. You know, we try to laugh, but, you know, we're sort of, we got butterflies in our stomach at the same time because we know, you know, I remember when I was fighting, I would have butterflies the whole time, and I would try to break that feeling with laughter and shit, but then I would same time kind of hear my name, I mean, not my name, but hear the numbers getting called for the fights, and my number was getting closer, and I was like, fuck, you know, like, but it was always like that, you know. But
which by the way, Eric is one of the people you mentioned before. He's the fighter who kind of likes photography.
that's definitely
thinks
true.
He's good at it.
So. I don't think I'm that great at it at all. I'm definitely an amateur photographer. I'm an amateur fighter and photographer and an amateur podcaster. But whatever, man. You know, but it's just like, I see your shit, man. Like, I've seen your stuff, man, and I've always been, you know, I've always been, you know, supporting your stuff, and I love what you do. I mean, it's really like that whole thing, though, like you were talking about showcasing and what Vinny was talking about, like that there are a lot of amateur fighters that haven't fought yet or just getting ready for their first one, and they're trying to see, you know, what the big names go through. And I think for a lot of guys that are in Muay Thai that probably don't get to see that stuff, like, see, or before this was even UFC, where they were shooting stuff behind the scenes,
right,
you were shooting stuff behind the scenes of guys we knew, and it was just like, man, they're just as nervous as us, they're just, you know, they go through the same thing. But it was that emotion, man, and I think that's what set your work apart from the everyday fight photographer, you know, which is what
I think what helped me the most was a lot of these guys were my friends, you know, like I started training at the yard. Mm-hmm. I started shooting Shailing a lot. Like, I would, like, the difference between like shooting a fighter just for photographs and creating a body of work is I follow the fighter through the whole camp and then the fight, and then I release all the photographs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just like, you know, I'm going to go to the fight, shoot these fights, I'm going to put them up right away because social media needs to see it. For me, it was about the weight cut, and that's the weight cut's nasty. You know, I don't care who you are, how well you do it. The weight cut's nasty, the hard sparring, or even coming back after being 20 pounds heavy and just getting your first sparring session. You know, that's I watch it all, you know, and that develops my story and then the style that I like to shoot. And, you know, being friends with these guys, really, I really understood the chemistry between them, their teammates, their coaches, the nerves before and after. And I think what really draws me to the way I shoot is that I really care about the people I shoot. You know, it's not just for the likes for me. I would shoot this stuff with, there was not, if Instagram wasn't around, you know, this is something that I really love.
No, definitely. I definitely shoot for the likes, man.
Yeah, for sure. Shoot for the likes.
That's like a lot of social media fighters.
The social media fighters. For likes. The training for them. Yeah.
You know, that's crazy because I see like people post about like the social media fighter, but I just don't pay attention to it. I don't know who they're talking about, but I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, why would, you know, like, why would you shoot? Why would you fight for Instagram? Like,
it's not even fighting for Instagram, bro. It's just training for Instagram.
Yeah. They don't actually ever fight. They train for likes. They want to call themselves a fighter, and that's it.
I see. So
they, you know, their videos are pad work.
Yep. Yeah, and then like pictures of their diet, like, oh, this weight cut is so hard, bro. and then it's like they never did a weight cut. I mean, well, they did a weight cut, but for like nothing, you know. Then they'll pull out at the last, and now, you know, there's a lot of that. Yeah, I think that's the problem. More so, I, you know, and you know, we'll get into that because you've been, like we were talking a little bit off air, is you've now seen, you know, the level. you know, because you've gone to world championships, you've gone to IFMAs, you've gone to the Pan Americans, you've seen the level that's out there. And I think what at the same time, sometimes in America, what we have, unfortunately, is we, and I think, I mean, back in the day, Joe Schilling and Kevin Ross and all these guys talked about it. And you know, it was very, you know, they were very hardcore in the way they talked about, you know, like a lot of people would talk the talk but wouldn't walk the walk, and these guys did, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of what Can't Stop Crazy was a lot of it was about, you know, that and I think, you know, that's unfortunately I think what we see a lot of times in the States too is, and especially with the growth of social media, is that, you know, it's a lot of like the posturing but not enough of the doing, you know? And that's kind of what it was, but you know, I mean, that's going to happen, I think. And I think it's going to happen in this culture where everyone's trying to showcase themselves, I guess. I don't know, you know?
Yeah, everyone, you know, I think everyone that is a legit fighter that wants to make a career out of fighting should have their own brand and build their own fan base.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to fight, what are you doing?
That's true.
Don't do it. Like, you're wasting time if you're just fronting, you know? But the people that do fight that are actually, you know, has an amateur career that's looking to go pro, I think it's healthy to have a brand.
Oh, no, sure.
Yeah.
I think it's 100%. Definitely 100%. You know, we've talked about it here. It's paramount for these guys to, and I think a lot of people we've had on the podcast have talked about it, that, you know, that fighters do have to market themselves, especially with the way things work here in the U.S., you know?
Yeah.
Because no one's giving out, you know, no one's going to give out anything free, you know, so you got to sort of fight your way into these big promotions. But the promotion also has to see what benefit are you going to bring to the table? You know, you might be a good fighter, but does anybody really know you? Does anybody really follow you? Are you going to be able to sell tickets? And that kind of sucks. But at the same time, it's, you know, and we've talked about that. It sucks. But at the same time, it's the reality, you know, like you got to put asses in seats. I mean, it's the same thing happens in the UFC. Like you have these amazing fighters, but they're not really, so I would say, exciting for some reason. They're very quiet. They're, you know, I mean, as much as what we like to say, I mean, I'm not a big guy on shit talking. You don't necessarily need to shit talk to make yourself, you know, relevant, but you got to have some sort of spice to you, you know, and you got to try to put it out there. That might help you if you're good at it. You know, I think Conor McGregor took it to that level where he was good at it and he was able to sustain that for a bit. But there were other guys that tried to follow suit and it came off like being like biting that style and it was really tacky. And then in Muay Thai, you know, I think Joe Schilling did a great job with the way he was and how he was just very straightforward and how he talked about things. I mean, I even had my brushes with Joe where I think he misunderstood me, you know, but it was just like, you know, I did always appreciate his style.
It's easy to misunderstand you because you just say the same thing in 400 different ways.
Yeah, because
when you say the same thing too many times, eventually it's going to be misunderstood.
I think it's good because you need both sides of the story, right? You need someone that's really humble and you need someone that's braggadocious.
Yeah.
That brings balance to Thai boxing. If everyone was humble and didn't want to talk shit, it would be really boring to watch. Like, oh yeah, I'd fight that guy, but you know, I respect him a lot. Yeah, I respect you. No, I want to fuck you up. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I don't mind the shit talking, but at the end of the day, it's still a respectable sport. But
yeah,
I think it's cool to build a fight.
Oh no, yeah, for sure.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a necessary evil as much as we don't like it, but it is. But I think, and it's funny because I see shit talking in Muay Thai, but it's more of like a, I don't know, I've seen it, but it's not necessarily that harsh or like that. I wouldn't say harsh. I would say like that, I don't know, man. It's not that.
Subliminal disses.
Yeah, or like that. Yeah, it's more subliminal disses. Yeah, and it's like more, not so much like a fucking circus, you know? Like, it's like, you know, I feel like, yeah, it's like, yeah, I want to get in the ring and beat the fuck out of you. But that's kind of the level it goes to. And then in the ring, they go hard. And then after that, everyone's cool. You know, I think that's for me what martial arts and should be, or combat sports should be. But it's kind of like I think what's happened, and I think a lot that turns off a lot of us Muay Thai heads to and kickboxing people who enjoy, you know, stand-up combat sports compared to MMA is like, it's kind of like, you know, you guys have gone overboard with it. You know, you're trying to, you know, now you're like getting into physical altercations outside and all this type of shit.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like, we don't, you know, if you want to say you want to fuck up a dude, that's fine, dude. But then, like, you show it in the ring, and then you're cool, you know?
Yeah.
And sure. I think that's one thing that's always been, I think that we're still on the right track with that. But going towards what we definitely want to talk about is you have, now that you're the, you know, the brand, what is it? The brand?
Chief Brand Officer.
Chief Brand Officer for the USMF. And you've gone to these tournaments. I mean, talk to me a little bit about this experience that you've had currently with the USMF and Team USA. And I know you've been a follower of the sport. You're passionate about the sport. But like I was saying, you started realizing, you know, as you've gone through this, you've talked to us off air of, you know, how it's kind of opened your eyes to be a part of this.
Well, I knew that when I think it was like December of like 2017, I wanted to shoot Muay Thai at the highest level, right? So mm-hmm. I started doing research. So I'm like, okay, well, what's the biggest Muay Thai, like, besides, you know, the stadiums, what's the biggest Muay Thai organization? And I found IFMA, and I started researching IFMA. I'm like, okay, I gotta do this, right? I gotta find a way to have my work on shown by IFMA or work through IFMA. And then I looked up how to get in touch with IFMA. First, go to your local chapter. Then it was a place in Texas. I'm like, who's running this in Texas? Yeah. And then I come to find out it was Michael Corley. He was running the United States Muay Thai Federation. So I'm gearing up to send this guy an email because I haven't met him before. You know, I've seen him on social media, but I was going to send him an email saying I want to, you know, be a part of the USMF. Before I was able to hit send, I got an email from Marcy Maxwell wishing me like Happy New Year, hoping that I can help the USMF somehow. And then I got on a call with her and I was like, look, I want to be a part of the USMF. This is what I can do. I can do this, this, and that. She vouched for me. She sent the board at that time my skill set, and they made me the creative director. And then I couldn't go to Belarus because I just got put on the USMF team when Belarus happened. Mm-hmm. And it was too late for me to raise funds to go to that. Mm-hmm. But I promised myself I was going to go to the Pan Americans in Mexico City. And that was an interesting experience. It was interesting to see how Muay Thai reached the South Americas, mm-hmm. you know, and North America as well. Because, you know, we're used to the Canadians. We're used to the United States guys fighting all the time. We see it all the time. But we don't see how Mexico has taken the sport and evolved it. Peruvians have taken the sport and evolved it. How Colombia finally has a federation, how Argentina has a federation, and how each of those countries make Muay Thai their own, mm-hmm. and how good they are, you know? Mm-hmm. And that after the Pan Americans, I couldn't stop thinking about Thai boxing. That was like one of the best experiences of my life, because I saw my personal friends win gold medals, and I've seen, like, you know, I've seen David Huerta win a gold medal. And I seen him like struggle just through that camp, through his own personal issues and finding a training partner and finding a coach to winning a gold medal. And that was like an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. I've seen Janet Todd win gold and just demolish chicks out there, you know, and I got to meet other people from the United States that I normally wouldn't have a chance to, like people from New York, people from Florida. And it was really cool because it didn't matter where you were from anymore. It mattered that you were from the United States, and no matter what, if you were in the same weight class or potential opponents, we all cleaned together, we supported each other, and that was a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And then I decided to go to the World Championships because it was in Cancun, and that was a totally different experience because I was used to seeing what the South Americans and North Americans were doing with Muay Thai. And because North and South America probably got Muay Thai the latest out of everyone in the world, maybe besides the Caribbean countries, mm-hmm. but we could safely say that, you know, Colombia, Argentina, Peru, United States, everyone else in the Central and South Americas and North Americas probably got Muay Thai the latest, right?
Yeah.
Whereas people from Kazakhstan, people from Ukraine, Turkey, these guys have had their federation is much longer, and there's more opportunity for them to start at such a young age, mm-hmm. that they're developing fighters at like 6 years old, right? I met so when I went there, I was shocked. The level of competition was ridiculous. They had great boxing, really aggressive fighters. They didn't give a fuck. They were there to fucking kill you. They don't break. You know, the difference. Yeah. They don't break when the ref says break, right? In America, break. Everyone stops. Okay, cool. Hands up. Separate you. They yell break. They're still kneeing you in the face, trying to dump you, head control.
Yeah.
And that's not what a lot of Americans are used to, right? We're used to, like, break, stop. Go to a neutral corner, whatever. Once they yell break, the ref is like running toward you because you guys are in a fucked up position.
Yeah.
Probably your head is probably almost touching the ground and this dude's keeping trying to knee you. The ref's trying to stop it, but this guy's still
trying to
lay you out because he's fighting for probably his whole year stipend. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably fighting for government funding that he would win or she would win versus someone that will go back to being like a bartender on the next weekend or, you know, or I'm going to be a designer. I'm going to go to the world championships. Oh, well, I lose. I get to go back to work. You know, someone put it into perspective to me, right? They said, imagine if there's two people with the same skill set going to a job interview. One of them has a job already. The other one doesn't have a job. Who do you think is going to try harder to get that job? Obviously, the person that doesn't have anything, right?
Yeah.
So these third world countries, like, you know, Belarus, they probably are getting a lot of money for winning gold and silver. I think I've heard that Russia will give you $100,000 if you win gold.
Oh shit!
So that's so, and they get funding, right? So they also have a place for everyone trains. They have tournaments to figure out who's A class and B class. So there's another. I also heard that. In another country, I'm not too sure what it is, but they have a tournament. They have local tournaments, regional tournaments, national tournaments. And the winner of the, I guess, the national tournaments, there's the first place winner gets A class, the second place winner goes to B class. So it doesn't matter if you're pro or amateur, it's just who won that day, and both you guys are going to go fuck people up at Worlds, you know what I mean? And these guys probably have like close to 300 fights together. You know, I've seen guys with 150 fights fight our guys that maybe have 60 max, you know? And 60 in America is a lot of fucking fights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I went to Worlds, I knew that this is a totally different experience. You know, our guys were losing. It was really hard to see, like, some of our best guys, like, just get laid out. Some of our guys losing by points. Like, it was awesome. It was amazing to see Asa beat Thailand. That was fucking incredible. It was incredible.
Yeah.
One of some of the best Muay Thai I've seen. And then he gets stopped by a cut by Turkey. You know, and that mix of emotion being there with your team, that was something that I can't even like explain in words how that felt. And then you know when we're all losing and somebody wins, that's like a feeling like, okay, now the rest of the team that are making it to the second round, we have that second win.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough. Definitely crazy emotions going on, you know, especially when you see your teammate lose and you're waiting to fight. A lot of crazy emotions going on.
Yeah, and I think I think you kind of hit it on the nail on the head too, Jeff, was with the whole experience about, or the whole the discussion about, yeah, we might be potential opponents here in the States, right?
Yeah.
Because we might be in the same weight class, or we might be in, you know, just a similar spread of weight. We might have maybe seen each other in tournaments or whatever, but then, you know, we got to put all of that aside because you got to, and it's almost like, you know, we're talking about, like how we talk about, you know, Muay Thai going to the Olympics. I mean, that's what the Olympics has to deal with too, you know, because a lot of these guys that are trying out for the Olympics, they're probably potential when they were in college and doing, like, let's say we think about wrestling or we think about swimming or we think about any of these big, you know, big sports that go to the Olympics. A lot of these guys have probably competed, you know, in NCAA stuff, you know, when they were in college and things like that, and they might be bitter rivals, but then they come to the team, the national team, and it's like, uh-huh, you got to put all that aside, and we're like standing under one team now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about with Muay Thai, like what you were saying, is like all of that sort of seemed like, and the one thing is, I remember the great thing about Cancun was or at least the last two IFMAs, has been that we've been able to kind of see them. You know, we've been able to see them and watch them, especially Cancun, because Belarus, you know, the time difference was tough. But with Cancun, I think a lot of us were able to tune in and check it out and see it. And it was, I think, I mean, even from, I think, you know, Vinny and I, we were watching it, and I think it was disheartening for us just watching it, you know, watching it and seeing, like, you're like, oh, Ace is up. This guy's up. You know, oh, Janet's up. And then, you know, even the guys we didn't know. Oh, the from Team USA, they're up next. And then, you know, at that time, it was kind of tough seeing them, you know, drop one by one. And we're like, kind of like, oh, man. And then Asa, you know, everyone was, he was having such an amazing tournament to be cut by, you know, Turkey. You know, it was just like all of us were kind of going through that, you know. So, and it definitely goes. It does definitely show the amount of, not only the amount of competition, but then also the amount of emotion and community that I think that we have behind Muay Thai right now and behind a lot of our Muay Thai athletes, you know, it's
I think this is the best way for the, like, there's almost like an unspoken process, right, to success almost, right?
Yeah.
It's like you win all your local matches, you win all the national tournaments here in the United States, and then there's eyes on you, right? If you win TBA's A class for like 2 years in a row, everyone's going to be looking at you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that, you know, that will give us more insight to how are you doing as an athlete in America, who are you facing, and then maybe potentially they would get into something like the Pan Americans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the Pan Americans is a great place for, you know, the USMF to bring in newer athletes to test them on the world stage, because some of these athletes have never left the country to fight before. You know, I've known some of these guys, like, this is the first time I've ever left my hometown and I'm going to go fight. That's a whole other different like thing you have to battle. Right. Imagine being somewhere in America and you've never left, but you beat everyone in your city. All of a sudden you're going to Turkey to fight and you've never been away from home. You're homesick. You don't have your coach. It's a whole, like, it's a crazy experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, speaking of crazy experiences, speaking of, you know, showcasing all that and showing people what it's like, you know, that you're a photographer, and we were talking about how you were showcasing, you know, the emotions and everything from behind the lens. Talk to us about the IFMA documentary, what we want to, you know, what we've been, the Striking Corner's been supporting you. We're behind you 100%, but I see a lot of love from the Muay Thai community for your, you know, trying to raise funds to do this documentary. So talk to us a little bit about this for the upcoming IFMA documentary or upcoming world that you're going to the worlds, that you want to cover the sport and cover the worlds for this documentary that you're doing.
Yeah. So thank you for having me in on this and, you know, helping me support the documentary first and foremost. You guys have been doing a great job. You know, you're one of the first people that I reached out to just to see if you guys could do anything for me or advice. And you guys have been really supportive of what I've been doing, and I'm grateful for that. The reason why I started to think about this documentary was because going into the World Championships, I wanted to figure out how we could market United States Muay Thai even more. Mm-hmm. There's a big issue in the United States now that fighters think that they can just win a couple tournaments and think that they belong on a world championship team. And I have to respectfully disagree with that because of what I've seen.
Yeah.
And it's a fact. You have to see it for yourself to understand what the tournament is like, hard it is.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, man, but are you trying to tell me that you have to earn your way onto the team?
I think so. I think that, you know, you have to have more than like three fights to say that you belong on the team, unfortunately.
That is amazing to me, man. I can't believe that.
and you know, like I was saying, the only way you really understand is if you see it for yourself. And that's why Vinny's going to go. He wants to see it for himself.
Yeah.
Because I could tell you all day till my face turns blue how hard it is. But if you don't go there, you won't know. So I was like, how can I show these people how hard this tournament is and what these athletes have to face every day going into it? And I was like, well, the best thing for me to do is show them through a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I I came up with a stupid idea to do a documentary, and I realized, well, shit, this is a big project, and I can't fund it myself, and I can't do it myself. So I kind of just talked to a couple of guys that are like a assistant of mine, and two guys that have been doing my videos, my behind the scenes videos. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is what I want to do. You know, do you think we could do it? They're like, yeah, Jeff, fuck it, we can do it. I'm like, all right, let's start. Let's try it. So I reached out to Corley and Marcy to let them know exactly what I was doing, because I like to be really transparent with who I work with. And I'm transparent with Marcy and Corley. They gave me the blessing. They said that it was a great idea, and that it was something that I should think on pursuing. So 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, here we go. Let's launch this GoFundMe. It took me like a month to put the GoFundMe together. And I launched it, and I've been receiving a lot of great support. And within like 2 weeks, I'm like a little over $4,000, which isn't too bad considering it's the Muay Thai community. And, you know, I'm not expecting a lot, but I'm hoping that I'm hoping that I can get it funded. And I'm talking to a couple key people that I'm trying to break deals with at the moment. So I have a good outlook, and I have a positive feeling that it'll be fully funded.
Nice. So now the documentary, are you focusing on IFMA as a whole or mostly Team USA?
That's a good question. So I will be documenting the United States team.
Okay.
You know, I'll be documenting the United States team, but in order for me to tell the USMF story, I have to contrast that with other federations and how they are more advanced, less advanced than us, to kind of show a dialogue between what America is going through as a United States Muay Thai Federation versus someone like Belarus, who is fully funded. It's already recognized Olympic sport in their country. How they get help and how they support their athletes versus us over here, mm-hmm. having to pay our own way. Most of the times we can't even train in the same facility because we're just not at that. We're not at that level yet.
Yeah.
I also wanted to, I also want to show in the documentary that, you know, there's a problem. Like, we don't start at a young enough age in America. And that's why I think YDL and what Patrick's doing with YDL is so instrumental in helping us develop fighters at a young age. So by the time they're 16, 17, they can 17 or 18, they can go into the adult tournaments and stand a fair chance. I met a young woman from Australia who was that just turned 18, and she won, like, I think she won silver, and mm-hmm. she's been fighting on the youth tournaments in Australia since she was like 13 or something. She just hopped over into the adult division, and then she won silver. I'm like, man, that's freaking nuts.
Yeah.
You know, where our kids can finally be like, okay, it's like, think about like how Taekwondo, right? You go to like a Taekwondo National. It's at like some Hollywood or like some Marriott hotel, and yeah. it's just a bunch of kids just going at it, right? Flags everywhere to give you trophies. But they start from like really young to the advanced black belts are like 16, 17. So if we do that for our kids, which we're hoping that the YDL will be, we will have a lot of great athletes in the next, you know, next decade or so.
Yeah,
The YDL is definitely going to make that happen.
It's amazing.
I 100% feel it because it's incredible. I actually went to my first one a couple weeks ago. It was in Delaware, and the first one that I attended, and I also had some kids in the event, and it was amazing. Like you see all these kids that they have such a high level at such a young age that it makes you really feel hopeful that the future is bright for the sport.
And they're having so much fun. It's not like they're not all serious like the adults. The adults are all serious, all trying to hit pads really hard, trying to intimidate each other. But like I went to my first one in Los Angeles too, and I swear to God, it was like a little mini IFMA, like little groups of kids all around in one room. But here's another thing about the IFMAs is like in the States, when you have a blue corner, red corner, you have two separate rooms, right? And some people get pissed. Oh, you put me in the red corner. I'm supposed to be in the blue corner. Nah, motherfucker. And IFMA, you're training next to Hungary. You're training next to Sweden. Like, they don't care. They're hitting pads next to you. You're probably fighting the guy right next to you. And they're warming up. Everyone has, like, medical teams to actually make sure that, like, physical therapists after the fights, like, they actually – this is a legit thing. Like, Once you get out of the ring, you come and there's physical therapy happening to you. You're getting massage. Yeah. You're getting treated for any potential injuries. I think last 2 years was the first time we actually had doctors go with us. Yeah. And like the first time that people were telling me like, yeah, people are bringing out like massage benches and shit, putting them in corners, like staking claims early. It's crazy. So like the first YDL I went to, it was like little IFMA, like little kids of groups of kids from different gyms all stacked around warming up against each other. I was like, I looked at this like, watch, when you guys are adults, you'll be even more intimidating. But it was cool for these little kids to experience that, you know?
Yeah. It's awesome. It's also that, I guess not to say ignorance in a bad way, but ignorance is bliss, you know, like for them, since they're so young and they're still, you know, their mind is still set on like, this is all fun and games. Right. And we lose that kind of when we get older, we definitely lose that sort of innocence at looking at things, and it becomes way more serious. But obviously it becomes more serious because you look at these, I guarantee you, man, I mean, this is kind of funny, but I guarantee you the YDLs in countries like Russia and Belarus are not fun.
I bet.
Those kids are probably like hardcore, bro. You know?
Yeah, they got like six packs in Kazakhstan.
Exactly. You know, but that's kind of like the way we're going to have to compete and see it like that, because it's different too. It's like, the one thing that I was thinking about as you were talking about the documentary is definitely, I would love to see, because you did do something with IFMA in Cancun, right? You were taking pictures, like these profile shots, right?
Yeah. So a goal of mine was to work with IFMA, right? Uh-huh. And Marcy knew that. And Marcy, you know, she's such an awesome person. She linked me up with the media person from IFMA and a girl named Neve. She's a girl from Europe, and she was doing a lot of their social media, and she's an actual journalist.
Okay.
So she wanted to do, I think it's called Humans of IFMA, where she interviewed different people from all over the world. Like she interviewed Ian from Peru, a girl from Tahiti. Yeah, they have Muay Thai in Tahiti, which is crazy. They're their federation too, right? A small island has a federation. Some people from the Ukraine, and she would write stories and I would take portraits of all of the fighters, and it was awesome. I got to meet people from all over the world, and IFMA shared it on their website, and I've been blessed that my work has been able to be seen from Muay Thai from all around the world. So that was a really great experience.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is for people that are listening, and all of you guys that know Jeff, and those of you that don't know Jeff and are listening to our podcast because you've started out Muay Thai, or you've been turned onto the podcast because you started out Muay Thai. The one thing I wanted to bring up, Jeff, was that, you know, IFMA has even reached out to you for this documentary and has even shared, you know, your GoFundMe. So they're behind you. And the one thing that's interesting to me too is I really feel like doing those portraits and stuff is great, because I really think it is important, even though we're going to focus on Team USA, I really think it is cool that you got these connections with all these other countries, because you can kind of go in there and showcase and say, look, this is how Peru does it. This is how Ukraine does it. This is how, you know, like what you were saying, you know, and what we were just talking about with YDL, like the intensity of maybe how things are dealt with in other countries, you know, which might be completely black and white compared to how we deal with things. You know, it might be super chill or intense, but chill in the USA when we're training over there at IFMA, when you guys are over there. But then you might step into, you know, Kazakhstan's dressing room and they're fucking, you know, hardcore, you know. But it's also a cultural thing, you know. So you'll see that juxtaposition and how it's cultural, in the sense is like, I think it would be amazing to hear the story of one guy from Kazakhstan saying, oh yeah, I trained this Muay Thai all the time because if I win, I get paid this amount of money, and that's what I make for an entire year, you know, compared to like what you were saying is, you know, juxtapose that with saying, you know, Janet Todd, amazing fighter, has done all of this stuff, is doing amazing on the world scene, but she has a 9-to-5 job as a freaking aerospace engineer. You know, it's not like she just does this. This is the only thing she does, and that's how she survives. She could potentially survive without it, but she does it because she loves it. So it's it's a very different cultural thing there, you know.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think when I started thinking about the documentary more, I realized like, yo, I'm involving the entire world scene. because I need to tell portions of their stories, you know? Mm-hmm. And because it's interesting to see you, like, I have to say Peru is one of the best countries out in North and South America that have received Muay Thai. They have guys like the Mazzetti brothers who have been on like Top King.
Definitely.
Ian's a beast, you know. Yeah. He's fought top guys all the time, you know what I mean? And, you know, Rodrigo, when I talked to Rodrigo, the head of the Peruvian Federation, he told me his story, and, you know, he came from Fairtex, you know?
Yeah, he studied under Alex Gong.
Alex yep. Gong, and... Yeah. You know,
his gym is named after Alex Gong.
Exactly. Yep. And he brought Muay Thai to Peru and he developed it for years. I mean, they didn't start that way, you know, start beating up motherfuckers in the A class.
They
started from a ground level, you know, a grassroots level, just like America did. But, you know, there's a trick to what he did and I'm trying to figure that out. I'm going to try to figure that out on camera. But,
sure.
But those guys are cool. But I, you know, also Sweden, right? Like those guys have amazing Muay Thai. You know, but I realized like I could be wrong, but I realized like I think all of the fighters come with their own coaches and then they come to IFMA together because I was doing some like pre-production trying to reach out to a few people. So I reached out to one of the Swedish coaches, Joakim. Do you know who he is? He was on the Contender Asia.
Okay. Yeah.
I reached out to him. He's like, yeah, we're going to be there. I go, so where is the Swedish team going to be training in Thailand? Because usually all the teams come to Thailand a week before, acclimate to the weather, then they go to the IFMAs. He was like, oh, well, we're all going to be in different areas. I was like, well, that's interesting. I didn't think that. I thought everyone would come together, one camp, all get acclimated. But I guess like different coaches come with different fighters and they're the ones that corner. Because I think Sophia came with her own coach, Sophia Olsen.
Yeah,
of course, I think she came with her own coach, and she had her own corner. She's crazy. She's scary. I saw her hit pads in the back, and man, I was like, holy shit!
Yeah, I mean, she fought in Glory, I remember, and she did a great job. I mean, it was just, you know, like, obviously kickboxing and Muay Thai rules are different, but she's scary, dude. And she's been like, she was like undefeated for quite a while too. Like,
dude, until she fought Tiff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, Tiff, that's going to be a hard fight for Tiff. And Tiff, you know, Tiff beat her. So props to Tiff because Sophia's a beast, man. She hits hard as fuck.
Definitely. It showed. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That was the fight I saw obviously in Glory. It was like, you could tell she was still a little bit stuck in the Muay Thai. Muay Thai roots, where Tiffany is already used to the kickboxing into Glory. It definitely showed, but you can see that she's a beast, man. But yeah, man, so obviously we want to wrap up here because, you know, there's so much stuff we can continue to talk about, and we'll definitely bring you on later, obviously, after this whole thing goes down. When you guys go out to IFMA, Vinny will be there. But, you know, Jeff, I just wanted to say, man, thanks for coming on the show. It's been, you know, I've always wanted to have you on. You've been doing a lot of great things for a long time, so I wanted to give you that shout out. I also wanted to tell people out there, listen, if you don't know Jeff DeHelio, please, please check out his work. He's doing some amazing stuff. You got a couple of different things. You're doing, besides your photography, besides West Coast Muay Thai, you have DeHelio Athletics. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So I decided to start my own like apparel line just because I have a different aesthetic than some of the people I work with. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly like one-offs and limited edition releases. Mm-hmm. So I do things like compression, shirts, shorts. I did a collaboration with InFight Style. I did some really cool shorts that I really liked. I do a lot of things that that are my personal taste when it comes to creating like apparel. Mm-hmm. So I released that like probably a year or two ago.
Cool. So you can give us give us a little bit of the social media there so people can follow you.
You could follow me at Jeff DeHelio. That's pretty much all of my social medias. Mm-hmm. DeHelio Athletics is my apparel line. You have to follow the USMF_official Instagram. That's where you can stay tuned to all of the USMF stuff. You always follow West Coast Muay Thai if you want to see what's up with the West Coast and stuff like that. Some great apparel there. Follow the Striking Corner. You got to follow these guys because if you don't, then you won't hear this podcast. But I do want to say something, though. I do want to give a shout out to Michael Corley and Marcy Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I really feel that they're the big driving force in the USMF. They spend so much time, their own personal time, and they sacrifice a lot to help this team get together to compete. I want to give a shout out also to Patrick Rivera for creating the YDL, because that's a major key and a stepping stone for us to get better as athletes in America. So I want to tip my hat off to them, because they're doing great work.
Nice. Oh, cool. Man. Yeah, definitely.
So, and now if anybody wants to, be a part of the documentary, donate, where can they find that?
Just go to GoFundMe.com/USA Muay Thai Doc, D-O-C, and you'll find all the information there. It'll have a breakdown of what the sponsorship tiers are, my purpose, a little video about what I'm trying to do. And, if you can't donate yourself, that's not a big deal. Send it to people that you think can help. The more eyes on my project, I feel, will help it succeed to be funded. You know, it's about eyes on this project, because the more people see what I'm doing, the better it is for our sport and the sport globally.
Yeah.
So if you guys out there, if you have the means to, please donate. It'll definitely help the project. You may even catch a glimpse of me, since I'll be there. That'll make it really awesome. So give, if you can do it, it's going to be awesome for everyone to see.
Yeah. I just definitely want to say that too, because like I said, guys, for you guys that are listening here, I've known Jeff DeHelio for a long time. I've seen his work. He's done a lot of great things. This is not like one of those GoFundMes for some pointless fucking reason. This is definitely like, this is definitely a real GoFundMe that it's going to be like, check out some of Jeff's stuff online too. I think, he had his Inside the Fight series. He's done some great stuff, videos and things for fighters such as Kevin Ross, for Joe Schilling. You can find all that stuff online, and, you can see the quality of his work. And this is back in the day, so only gotten better. So he's going to have a full, like, the whole idea for this is to get a whole full team so he can have sound and he can have the guys working with video, and then he'll be obviously directing the show. I think it's going to be an amazing thing. So, like I said, Jeff, I just want to say, it's the real deal. You know, he's really going out there to do some work and really showcase what the sport is about and really help Team USA shine. But not only Team USA, IFMA as a whole, which is an amazing competition. So really, guys, we're making a call out to the Muay Thai community. We've helped out. We have them on the show. We would love you guys to support it, because we're supporting it 100%. We can't even wait to see it. And I know it's going to take some work, but, all of us together can definitely help make it happen. So GoFundMe.com/USA Muay Thai Doc.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, guys. So thank you very much, Jeff, for coming on, man. And it's been a pleasure, and we can't wait to see it. And I guess we'll talk again on this podcast. I think we'll do one once both Vinny and you get back. But once you finish the whole thing and release it, we'll talk about how that shit all went, man.
Awesome. Thank you guys for your time. Thank you guys for what you're doing for the sport too. Mm-hmm. You guys are innovators in the media game. And I think, you guys are doing a really great job focusing on people in the sport that matter. So I appreciate you guys' time.
No worries, man. We love having you, and we love having people that are as passionate as we are, man. So thank you very much, man. All right, everybody. So that was our good friend, Jeff DeHelio. Awesome to have him on the podcast. He's somebody who's been doing some great stuff creatively, photography, just a lot of really creative work for Muay Thai for quite some time now. And he's really, as some of the brands that he's worked on suggest, he has been part of the really the grassroots movement of Muay Thai in the United States for a long time now. And he's doing a great project here with the IFMA documentary that he wants to shoot for the upcoming IFMA World Championships, which will be in Bangkok, Thailand, which is where Vinny will be as well. And
Grassroots, like your term of the day, because you must have said it like at least 9 times.
Well, they use it in there. He uses it as well, man. I just.
So that means you should use it?
Yeah. Dude, why are you such a fucking hater, bro? Like, damn. bro.
Anyway.
Done with you. Anyway. no, but anyway, yeah. So he's been part. It was awesome having him on the podcast. Somebody I've wanted to you know, talk to and shoot the shit for a long time. Haven't met him personally, but definitely have met him. Have talked to him quite a few times online, and you know, that's pretty much how a lot of things work these days. But that's it, man. You know, we were great to talk to him and honored to have him on the show. So with that said, guys, please once again follow us at Striking Corner. That's on Instagram and Twitter, and also on Facebook. And then remember that our main website is strikingcorner.com, which is where you can find all of our episodes of the Striking Corner podcast, as well as any other information you would like to know. Send us some emails. Send us, you know, let us know how we're doing. You can contact us through there, through the contact page, or info@strikingcorner.com. Besides that, you can follow me on my personal account. It's Eric Rivera_TSC, where I try to use a lot of my amateur photography skills. As Vinny said, I was shit anyway, and that I like to say that I'm a photographer. I'm not as good as Jeff, but definitely I try. And besides that, Vinny, how can they follow you?
At Vinny Scotto.
All right. And what can they hope to find there? Any actual good content or?
No, none.
All right, guys. Well, you can follow us at both of those social media platforms. We're really most active on Instagram. And besides that, guys, obviously the strikingcorner.com is where you can find our episodes. But we're also available, as you guys heard, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, all of those. So whichever one works best for you, go there, listen to us, and I always like to say, if you guys do listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a comment and a rating. It really helps us grow in this in the library that is iTunes, which is one of the largest podcasting libraries on the net. That's it, guys.
Wherever there is podcast, we are there.
Wherever there is podcast, we are there currently. Yep. So that's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for supporting the Striking Corner. If you enjoy listening to Vinny talk shit to me, you're not one of my favorite people, but you might be one of his. But besides that, guys, thank you for your support. And we will be back in 2 weeks with another guest on the Striking Corner. And once again, thank you for listening. And we'll talk again soon.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.